Crisis Radio, Webster Topley here in Washington, D.C. And now, as has become traditional, we want to look into the fight to defend the U.S. Constitution, the real one, not the imaginary one that a lot of characters are talking about, but the real one that says you've got to be a natural-born citizen and you've got to be 35 years old. And for that, no better place to go than Philadelphia and our good friend Phil Berg, distinguished lawyer, Democratic Party official, candidate for senator and governor of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania in years past. Welcome, Phil.
My pleasure. How are you today?
Fine, fine. So what's the news? Do we have anything?
Well, the news is, you know, we're a little frustrated because the Third Circuit Court of Appeals knocked us out, said we didn't have standing. But we are proceeding. First off, our website is being updated. It's obamacrimes.com, obamacrimes.com. I hope people will go there. We are going to appeal the Third Circuit Court of Appeals, which just affirmed the lower court saying I don't have standing. It's absolutely ridiculous. Now, interesting, we asked them to take judicial notice of a matter that occurred in another federal court, and they would not. But that'll help us at the U.S. Supreme Court. We asked them to take judicial notice of the fact that a U.S. attorney and a representative from the U.S. Department of Justice, upon questioning by Judge Carter in federal court in California, responded that the case that they were looking at there had been filed on January 20th after Obama had been sworn in as president. And the judge got the attorneys for the Justice Department and Attorney General's office to confirm, actually to state on the record, that if the case had been filed before the election in November 8, 2008, there would be standing. Well, as you are aware, I filed my lawsuit on August 21, 2008, way before the November election. So according to the Justice Department and U.S. Attorney's Office, I have standing. So that's going to be, I think that's a major, major plus for us. And unfortunately, we have to just deal with it through the court system.
Excellent, Phil. What struck me again last week was this idea that you don't have to go all the way to victory in order to win. That is, as soon as you get discovery, as soon as you get access to what Obama calls his birth certificate, that's likely to blow up the case right then and there. So it's not an impossible threshold.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think we're doing it. We're trying to get more and more people aware. I have a Facebook account under my name, Philip J. Berg, but that's loaded. I have 5,000 friends. We just opened a second one on Facebook. If people want to join, that way we can send them instant messages. The website and the Facebook are the same. I opened a Facebook under obamacrimes.com, so hopefully people can go there. And we still have the other case, which I think is substantial. We're doing, waiting for a briefing schedule, and that's the False Claims Act case, or the Qui Tem, where I state that it's Barack Obama is really not naturalized, not natural born, not naturalized, but he's an illegal alien. Therefore, his term as a U.S. senator was fraudulent. Therefore, all money that he received for salary and benefits should be returned to the U.S. Treasury, an amount over $1 million. The judge knocked that out, but he's wrong. And what's interesting in that False Claims Act case, that the Supreme Court of the United States has already stated that in those type cases, the relator, the person bringing forth the action, in this case it's myself, Philip J. Berg, has standing. So on those cases, the standing is there already. So I feel confident that we're going to get something. It's going to take a little while. But meanwhile, I'm hoping that the public can really support us and get out there and spread the word. The more people get involved in here, I think we can make Obama produce, either show us that you're natural born, which I don't believe he can, or step out of office. And that's my goal, and I'm working hard on it. I'm sure you're aware that Dr. Reverend Manning just got a visit by the CIA. I'm in touch with him. We spoke together December the 8th, 2008, down at the National Press Club in Washington, and I'm hoping to hook up with him. If he gets arrested, I'm hoping I'll even go and
Can you give us some details on that, Phil, because I'm not aware of it.
What happened was the other night the CIA came to visit him. And because he put something supposedly on his website, and they implied he wanted to shoot the president. He said he didn't want to shoot the president, but they came to him to intimidate him, and he feels he's going to get arrested for bringing forth. He has told the Tea Party, which I'm glad he's doing because it's something I suggested before, that the Tea Party movement should get behind the birth certificate issue. And then whatever comment he made, and someone else was just visited this week by the CIA, so I expect them to come see me one of these days because I'm very outspoken. I think Obama is a fraud, a phony. I think it's the biggest hoax in the history of our country. I feel that Obama and Michelle Obama and Howard Dean and other officials of the Democratic National Committee, senior campaign officials of Obama, now senior administration officials, should all be subjected to the criminal justice system, tried, those convicted should go to jail. So, you know, I'm not, I don't want anything that physically happened to Obama, but I think that his place in history will be out of office. Remember, Nixon was forced to resign, and the break-in was not that big deal, but what happened was they got after Nixon on the cover-up. Well, we have a massive cover-up because Obama hasn't been honest, and since January, he has spent over $1.6 million hiding behind his lawyers fighting these lawsuits on technical grounds, and I believe it's a part of the conspiracy. It's part of the cover-up, and I think on those grounds we can proceed against Obama, and I'm going to do everything in my power to see that justice is prevailed, but the first thing is, the most important, is to get him out of office.
Phil, we had reports a couple of months ago from Canada, as I recall, about a special department or bureau in the White House that did just birth certificate issues. Remember, with Clinton, we had bimbo eruptions, and this time with Obama, we have birth certificate eruptions. And that's a big problem in terms of running a White House that way. Is there anything new on that?
No, what I heard is that there was a very, I spoke to the show where she was on, the gentleman and the woman from the Canadian, the Canada Free Press. They say the story is absolutely true, but the person with the close information in Washington, D.C. has not come forth to say that they can release her or his name and the information. But I believe it's legit. This effort's being handled through the White House. I think it's a massive cover-up. And we're going to demand through our website, that's why we hope to get more and more people, we're going to demand the truth. We're going to demand that they show their information. And if they can't come forth with it, you know, I think we're going to try to get pressure for Obama to resign.
One thing about Obama, I think we've had now the Gallup poll, which is all adults, not even likely voters or registered voters, but just adults. Obama's popularity has now fallen below 49% for the first time on the Gallup poll, which is probably the flagship of the polling world. So certainly there's going to be more receptivity to learning the truth, I would think.
Well, that's good. And as he's dropping in the polls, people are starting to question more and more things. And there's nothing more important to question than whether he is constitutionally eligible to be president. And we feel that he is not. And therefore, I'm hoping people get on my bandwagon. You know, I've been doing this now for over 15, 16 months. So I'm working hard on it, and I will continue to work hard on it.
And an important public service it is. Thank you very much, Phil. We want to wish you, I guess we have to wish you a happy Thanksgiving at this point. And it's ObamaCrimes.com. Go there, get informed, make a contribution, and we'll see you next week. Are you going to be around on the Friday after Thanksgiving?
Yes, I will.
Okay, wonderful. We'll see you then.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, thanks to Phil Berg. Where we left off, though, on economics, right, the depression continuing apace, 520,000, 25,000 new unemployment claims in this past week. And we've also got this interesting story having to do with the dollar, right? The normal crackpot, quackademic economists argue that a weak dollar will aid exports, but we'll see that that's not the whole story. Back in a minute.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
radio. 500,000 new unemployment claims plus. We had three banks seized last Friday, right? The special Friday Owl of Minerva raids by Sheila Bair and the FDIC. That was Georgia, California, Illinois, and Florida. And we've got 123 banks shut down so far this year. Those states I just gave were the ones where you had the most bank failures. And a lot of quackademic economists say that, well, you know, the dollar is cheapening. That means there'll be exports. Yeah, too bad there are no export industries left. Too bad the U.S. has been so completely deindustrialized. You can't pull export industries out of your nose just because the dollar goes down. A lot of these things were destroyed during the reign of Paul Adolf Volcker, who's now sitting in the White House as a gray eminence. The news is the most recent U.S. merchandise trade deficit, this is the one that really hurts. The federal budget deficit is more manageable than this one. This is the dollar overhang in the world. We've had a $36.5 billion monthly deficit. And the thing about it is, that is up almost 20% from the previous month's trade deficit. So what they say is the balance of trade deficit is getting bigger, even though the weak dollar is somewhat aiding exports, but not enough. The U.S. export level is 20% below where it was when the crisis started back in September. So the weak dollar not having much of an effect. Now, we've got, again, Bernanke and Geithner and Summers under attack. Most interesting, of course, the House Financial Services Committee voted 43-26 to approve the Ron Paul Amendment to audit the Fed. And, of course, Bernanke is freaking out on this. This is a highly constructive measure. Accountability. We want to know where that money went. We want to know what foreign banks, foreign hedge funds, foreign hyenas have gotten U.S. taxpayer money in the process. And, of course, we have the Wall Street Journal reporting this. The more interesting one is the Washington Post. Washington Post, of course, the house organ of the Federal Reserve. That's who runs it, right? We're told that the most troubling for the administration was this measure by Ron Paul that would subject the Federal Reserve to unprecedented scrutiny, which passed the House Financial Services Committee. And they have 300 members of the House of Representatives have signed on to this Ron Paul amendment. Oversight, accountability, and naturally Bernanke says, no, not us. And the worry from the Wall Street Journal and indeed the Washington Post is that these wonderful policymakers have to be independent. Independent of what? Independent of the voters? Independent of the Constitution? Independent of the national interest? What do they represent? How are they independent? They're not independent. They speak for the Wall Street money center banks, and everybody knows it. They are the zombie bankers, the hedge fund hyenas, and the financial jackals of every stripe. And this is finally now seeping in. So we can call it Paul Sanders, because Sanders, Bernie Sanders of Vermont, is sponsoring a parallel measure. It will be harder to get it through the Senate, of course, for the usual structural reason, but Bernie Sanders already has about a third of the Senate that have come on board. And then we have the revelations about Tiny Tim Geithner, the tax cheat, and AIG. More stuff is coming out about how Tiny Tim Geithner, when he was the head of the New York Federal Reserve, the flagship branch of the entire system last September, that infamous meeting over that weekend of Lehman Brothers in his office, and then what he did in that following week, transferring what is now $180 billion plus to AIG, with tranches of that in the $10 to $12 billion range going to Deutsche Bank, Barclays Bank, Societe Generale, other foreign banking institutions, as well as a good hefty $15 billion or so to Goldman Sachs. What was that all about? That's exactly what an audit might reveal. We want to audit the New York branch, not just the Federal Board of Governors in Washington, D.C. That's not the real center of power. We want to audit the New York Fed. That is the one. There are secrets in there going back to World War I and even beyond. And then when Geithner appeared to try to sell his bankrupt policies, we had two Republicans performing a useful public service. That would be Congressman Brady and Congressman Burgess, Republicans, saying that he should resign. And yes, he should resign. He should resign and be indicted. He should be impeached and indicted because this is a monstrous thing. We've also got Congressman DeFazio of Oregon calling for the ouster, the firing of Geithner and Summers. Don't forget Summers. He's the one who makes the policies that come out of Geithner's Tiny Tim's little mouth. So you've also got Dodd. Dodd, in order to try to hang on to his Senate seat, is striking the pose of somebody who wants to strip away the regulatory dimensions of the Fed, because it's an easy argument. The Fed has failed utterly as a regulator. They have struck out again and again. They have failed and failed and failed. Remember, Greenspan was the guy who brought you the derivatives plague. Greenspan was the number one advocate of wild derivatives markets, right? Completely deregulated, not even reportable. Remember his fight with Brooksley Bourne. So this is an absolute monstrosity. So Geithner should indeed go. And what you're seeing now is also a general rage against the Obama administration. As a matter of fact, that's how the Washington Post tries to play it. They say angry Congress lashes out at Obama. Well, it's really more directly the Fed and Geithner. But of course, Obama is the patron of both. Obama is Mr. Bailout. We've got the Black Caucus saying, and it's quite useful and quite true, that the black community has not been served by any of these financial regulations. They need protection. I'll tell you some protection. How about slapping a 10% maximum on payday loans from predatory lenders? How about slapping a 10% federal ceiling, a usury law at the federal level, so you can have a credit card, but the interest rate on it can't go above 10% when you factor in all the fees that they're hitting you with. You probably noticed the Fed is so scared that they came out last week with some very weak limits on these fees, overdraft fees and related fees that banks are charging. This was simply the Fed scurrying to cover their rear end in the face of this tremendous anger that's going on. So on to audit, but above all, seize the Fed, run it as a Bureau of the Treasury. We'll be back in a minute.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
Back to World Crisis Radio. Now, the other important issue, or one other important issue we want to talk about here, is the death panels. Now, we've got Harry Reid has trotted out his Senate health bill with the weakest of weak public options. He's got $500 billion plus of cuts to Medicare and indeed to Medicaid. We've got, based on the Bush-era looting of Medicare, if the Congress is not able to act, there will be a 21% cut in the Medicare reimbursements to doctors in particular coming up very, very soon. That's Bush-era looting, but that's nothing compared to the Obama-era looting of Medicare. Remember, the approach we have here is defend the New Deal, defend the Great Society against the banker's boy and Wall Street puppet, Obama, who wants to destroy your economic rights under left cover. Don't be fooled. The government takeover is not so much the point. Government looting of your rights under Medicare, Medicaid, Veterans Administration, hospitals, and so forth. And we've got two incidents that really point this up, which I regard as huge. Anybody who is approaching 65 should be against the Obama bills, the Reid bill and the Pelosi bill, because they cut, gouge $500 billion plus from your rights under Medicare, and you're going to need those to survive. Now the question is, women. What is Obama doing for women? I mean, the misogyny, the hatred of women in the Obama campaign was a favorite theme of the Pumas, and they were absolutely right. So here's what we have. The death board in question. It just shows that any board can become a death board when you get Malthusian ghouls and lunatics and cost cutters on board. This is the United States Preventive Services Task Force. And this is a group of political hacks. Some of them have MDs. Some of them have PhDs. They're all incompetent. They're all political shills. We can talk about some of the people on the board, some of them you've seen in these various interviews. Diana Petiti was the chairman. There was a Dr. Gregory on there, Lucy Marion, a nurse, Dr. Tim Wilt. And what they say is, the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force says, no mammograms, pardon me, no mammograms for women between the ages of 40 and 50, and after 50, only every other year. Now, everybody knows young women who have been diagnosed with breast cancer in their 30s or even earlier. This is criminal. This is cost-cutting. This is genocide for the purpose of doing what? Getting money for bigger and better Wall Street bailouts for Geithner and his parasitical hedge fund hyena friends. If you saw the debate on Anderson Cooper CNN with Dr. Gregory, who's in favor of these cuts, facing off against the guy from Harvard who knew what he was talking about, you'll see that these people are tongue-tied, stammering, incompetent fools. They're wretches. They should be disbarred, or whatever the equivalent is, medical license taken away. These are quackademics and what can we call them? Fascist doctors, I suppose, would be the first approximation. The person that I think we've got to blame above all is ORSAG, Peter ORSAG, O-R-S-Z-A-G. This is this bean counter, the guy with the beanie with the propeller on it. This guy is leading a one-man crusade, of course, using the federal government, against tests. ORSAG hates mammograms. He hates MRIs. He hates CAT scans. He hates the nuclear stress test for your heart. He hates the PSA prostate-specific antigen test because he says not only are these tests unneeded, we don't need them, they're superfluous, but when you get a positive result on any of these, in other words, an alarming result, then there are going to be biopsies and other tests and other procedures that cost us more and more. So ORSAG says, as a good Malthusian ghoul, you should die. And that's the logic. Now, if the first one were not enough, coming from the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, today, this morning, in the papers, we have the American College of Gynecology and Obstetrics saying that there should be no pap tests to screen for cervical cancer until women reach the age of 21. This is another piece of insanity. The question to ask these people in both cases is, what are the new studies, the new controlled statistical studies that have led you to this? Because from about the middle of the 1980s until now, the U.S. government has officially, and the medical establishment, have officially encouraged mammograms, and they have indeed increasingly encouraged cervical cancer screenings because of the prevalence now of papilloma virus. What has changed? Well, what has changed is that Peter ORSAG is now running the financial side of the government, this lunatic with his fascist furor that you don't deserve medical tests, that you're a useless eater, a non-productive cull, and that you should be gotten rid of. There's no speculation about death boards. These are death boards. They are panels of incompetent bureaucrats. Now, the question, of course, is, are they under the influence of the insurance companies? Of course they are. The Republicans are going to say, we want insurance companies to decide what your care is. The Obama social fascist crew say, no, we want government to decide it. Well, the answer is none of that. We don't want either of those. This is a perfect example where the Republican answer is just as bankrupt. Remember, under the Republicans, there wouldn't even be death boards. There would be nothing because you'd have no Medicare, no Medicaid, no nothing. You'd have just your eyes to cry with. Obama has to do it under left cover, which means that he's got to put out these recommendations and do it through this machinery that is there. It's a huge issue. If every senior citizen or potential prospective Medicare beneficiary realized what this bill, both of them, are going to do to Medicare, the $500 billion in cuts, that would already lop off a significant amount of support. The AARP has betrayed its own base, needless to say. On the side now of the pap tests and the mammograms, every woman ought to be up in arms because this is a direct war being waged by the misogynist, woman-hating Obama administration against the health of every woman, meaning against society and civilization in toto. We obviously have to thank the medical establishment. The American Cancer Society, above all, has done itself honor by immediately rejecting these crackpot, quackademic proposals coming from the ORSAG-controlled Obama administration. So that is a huge political issue. Notice also the Congress that's going to be voting on this is really the Pluto Congress. 237 millionaires will be in there. So this is coming to a vote most likely on Saturday, the 21st of November, and it's going to be another one of these nighttime votes. This will be to open debate. Reid will need another vote to cut off debate, and then he'll have to pass the bill, and then that will have to be reconciled, if it gets that far, with something from the House. And then those two will also have to be passed. So again, stall, gridlock. Gridlock is better than these monstrous proposals. Gridlock is better than the Obama proposals. Gridlock is better than the equally or even more bankrupt proposals coming from the reactionary Republicans, particularly the Boehner plan, which was put up this week, which allows pre-existing conditions to be cited, so you don't get any care.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Ironically, as fate would have it, one of the people who's going to suffer perhaps from the lack of cancer screening is Obama himself. Take a look at The Globe, headline story, Obama Lung Cancer Drama. And we're told here that Obama is now suffering from coughing fits, dizzy spells, chest pains, loss of appetite, but continues to smoke up a storm. We had that already in The Globe last week, that he was freaking out over his unpopularity and the attacks and other related issues. The guy's been smoking Marlboros for 30 years. Insider source says a lot of us are worried about Obama. He's losing weight, barely eats. You can tell something is terribly wrong just by looking at him. The gaunt commander-in-chief left the gymnasium in Washington, D.C., looking so skinny that his jacket seemed to be several sizes too large. President Obama is way too thin, says weight loss expert Dr. Edward Jakowski. His face, neck, and entire body look drawn, stressed, and weak. Obama's 6'1". When he got into office, he was weighing 180 pounds. Now he's down to 155. A published report disclosed that he recently collapsed, slumping to his desk in exhaustion. We also have the fear of lung cancer, which is haunting Michelle. Because of his smoking and coughing, he can't keep his food down. At the last White House banquet, he left the room suddenly and vomited. He claims that he doesn't smoke in the White House, but as soon as Michelle is not there, he lights up a Marlboro. So apparently, according to this, he's only willing to go to his once-a-year Walter Reed or Bethesda Naval Center checkup. He has cancer in the family. His mother died of ovarian cancer, and one of his grandfathers died of prostate cancer. So this is the time for lots of tests. So this is a time when ORSAG could be the main threat to Obama, as well as all sorts of other people. Now, quickly going through, on that trip to Asia, the interesting economy is that of South Korea, the ROK. ROK is moving fast now to become one of the main nuclear plant providers in the world. The offers being given by the Republic of Korea, South Korea nuclear industry, for various contracts being led around the world, they're successfully competing with the French team of Areva, that is the Framatome, and they're competing also with the Japanese U.S. teams, and they're doing so on a cost-effective basis. One of the big plums right now is $40 billion of nuclear plants in the United Arab Emirates. Again, the British building 10 large modern nuclear reactors. The United States is dying. The United States is moribund. The United States is a wreck, a shattered hulk, adrift on the waters of monetarism and bankruptcy of zombie banks and all the cronies of Geithner and Summers and so forth. So in terms of economic policy, President Hu of China is right to want fixed parities. Don't beat up on Hu because he wants to have a fixed relationship between the dollar and the renminbi, the Chinese currency. That's fine. But President Hu, don't give us lectures about free trade. Protectionism is the solution. We would need in this country, as I have in my five-point program, at least a 10% protective tariff. That would be a rather modest protective tariff to begin with. I would point President Hu to the folly of keeping $1 trillion plus in treasury bills when you've got a developing country with lots of poverty, backwardness, need for infrastructure in central China. And the way to get rid of those is not to regard them as a financial asset, but to use them to buy things. You can buy things all over the world with dollars, but in particular, you ought to buy things here in the United States. Buy 1,000 modern hospitals for interior of China. Buy infrastructure that the U.S. can do. You still do have these places like Foster Wheeler, Bechtel, Fluor, and so forth, Parsons Engineering. They can build things. Get them in there and let them build. In terms of programmatic developments, other than the worldwide victory of nuclear, which is simply there, Montgomery County, north of Washington, D.C., the Corridor City's development seems to be going in favor of light rail rather than the wretched, inadequate solution of simply buses. On other programmatic points, the Tobin tax is big on CNBC. Today, November 20th, we had a discussion on CNBC about a global Tobin tax. Let me warn everybody, the global Tobin tax is not, repeat, not what we want. We want a U.S. Tobin tax so the money goes to the U.S. Treasury and to the U.S. states that are hurting. Here's a list of states that need help. We've got about 10 states that are now approaching insolvency, some big ones. California, Arizona, Rhode Island, Michigan, Oregon, Nevada, Florida, New Jersey, Illinois, Wisconsin. They need the income from a Tobin tax. We don't want to send that to the IMF, the World Bank, the Bank for International Settlements, so they can use that for more bailouts of countries when the Africans have defaulted on their loans and so forth and the banks want to get paid. Forget that. The Tobin tax is a U.S. measure of nationalist, protectionist, dirigist, and mercantilist, and indeed Hamiltonian economics. So we want that. The poor lady Ann Lee of NYU getting beat up by a bunch of CNBC reactionaries. One of the interesting things is these characters have been telling us buy and hold, buy and hold, buy and hold. Well, if you buy and hold, you won't pay any Tobin tax. The point is the people who are going to pay the Tobin tax are the people who do high-frequency trading, flash trading, program trading in all of its transmogrifications. Those are the people who are going to pay through the nose on the Tobin tax, and they should. Ann Lee should have said, speculation is an evil. Speculation destroys societies. Whole civilizations have been destroyed by financial parasitism and speculation. Another interesting point. It's now been revealed that the Small Business Administration under Obama doesn't make loans to small business. It should. God knows it's small enough. It's underfunded enough. Under Obama, the Small Business Administration makes preferential loans to Fortune 500 companies. What is that? That's typical. So what you have under Obama is a $24 trillion bailout that creates new asset bubbles. All the money goes to banks, hedge funds, insurance companies, credit card companies, and all the rest. And the entire productive sector is being starved. This will not last. This will not be possible. So what we need, again, is to seize the Federal Reserve. After all of this Sturm und Drang and hue and cry about the Fed, the result is don't abolish it. If you abolish it, you put that all the power back into the hands of Jamie Dimon, Pandit the Bandit, Blankfein, and the rest of them. What you want to do is nationalize the Fed so you can use that to issue 0% credit for production only, not for stock jobbing, speculation, hedge funds, carry trade, all kinds of speculative swindles. No, we've had more than enough of that. You've got to redirect the economy out of purely financial instruments and back into production. In other words, we need to think about less about finance and more about economics. And above all, where's our heavy industry? That's the power shift that people are noting in Obama's trip to Asia, is that China, Japan, and South Korea are industrial powers. They have maintained a full-set economy. They have heavy industry. They have large-scale commodity manufacturing production, tangible physical wealth. They have not built their house with derivatives, speculation, hedge funds, index funds, and all the rest of this stuff. This is why the U.S. is getting weaker and weaker. And if you don't want to start learning Chinese or Japanese or Korean or whatever it is, you have got to have large-scale industrial production, infrastructure, agriculture, real commodity production. And that is the direction of my program. And that is why you've got to nationalize the Fed and force them to put out 0% credit, not for banks, but for industry, farms, local businesses, as long as there's a physical product involved, 0%. And that goes down to a restaurant, a dry cleaner, a taxi company, a ferry, an airline, you name it. And we'll be back next week. Happy Thanksgiving to all.